collectively, and I know this is not an issue that we talk about too much, collectively, the 400 richest Americans have accumulated $1.27 trillion in wealth. How much more do they want? When is enough enough? You want it all? We already have millions of families today that have zero wealth. They owe more than they own. Millions of families have below zero wealth. We are living in a situation where the top 1% owns more wealth than the bottom 90%. And Mr. President, that is simply unacceptable.
You're listening to episode 542 of Unwelcome Guests. Bernie Sanders speaks out. I'm Robin Upton, and that was Bernie Sanders. Sanders is one of only two independents in the US Senate, and last December he gave an 8.5-hour speech to protest a bill which extended tax breaks to the richest Americans. That bill, as has become pretty much routine, was deceptively named the Tax Relief Unemployment Insurance Reauthorization and Job Creation Act of 2010, and it was passed a few days later. So his protest was not effective in that capacity, but I hope will prove effective to bring home some of the details of what is going on and what is either legal or sufficiently a grey area that it is not prosecuted. Compared to several of our speakers, you might think this gentleman is in the box, but it is what he does for a living. He is surrounded by people who pretend to take this stuff seriously, and he is one of the very few who has the courage to speak out publicly. And the only reason he's got these details is because he's already successfully led campaigns against the privacy of the US Federal Reserve, which is, of course, a private corporation masquerading as some kind of arm of the US government. I don't think we've actually had a show on the Fed, but perhaps one of those would be in order. The show is made possible by the great work of Mariah Galadin, whose TUC Radio, that's tucradio.org, brought Bernie Sanders' filibuster speech to my attention, and the next voice that you'll hear is hers.
The best of Bernie Sanders. High points from his Senate filibuster. Who received secret funding from the Federal Reserve?
After years of stonewalling, the American people have learned the incredible and jaw-dropping details of the Fed's multi-trillion dollar bailout of Wall Street and corporate America.
Vermont's independent Senator Bernie Sanders' 8.5-hour filibuster speech in protest of the bill that, among other gifts, extended tax breaks to the richest Americans, crashed the Senate servers. Bars and pizza parlors carried his speech live. He began speaking on the morning of Friday, December 10, and did not eat or sit down until 7 p.m. He gave one of those speeches many wished President Obama was capable of giving. Even though, or really because, the bill did pass both houses a few days later, Sanders' words must be remembered. This bill, ironically called Tax Relief Unemployment Insurance Reauthorization and Job Creation Act of 2010, is an attack on Social Security and a blueprint for even larger gifts and tax relief to corporations and the rich. The speech is also filled with fascinating details on the ongoing work by Bernie Sanders and a few colleagues. Sanders had led a fight against the powerful Federal Reserve and won forcing the central bank to disclose more details than ever on its rescue actions during the financial crisis. Sanders refers to that fight early on in his filibuster.
Mr. President, let me mention that just a couple of weeks ago, the Fed, Federal Reserve, published on their website some 21,000 transactions that took place during the Wall Street meltdown period. And that disclosure was made possible as part of a provision that I put into the financial reform bill because I thought it was important that the American people, for the first time, lift the veil of secrecy at the Fed and get a sense of the kind of money that was lent out by the Fed and who received that money. Now, what's very interesting is that the American people and the media have focused on the $700 billion Wall Street bailout, now known as TARP. Now, I happen to have voted against that agreement, but in fairness, that agreement was pretty transparent. The Treasury Department put up on their website all of those banks and financial institutions who received the money. If you want to know where the money went, it's right up there on the Treasury Department's website. But at the same time, a bigger transaction was taking place than TARP, which got relatively little attention, and that was the role that the Fed was playing in terms of the Wall Street bailout. While the TARP issue was being debated during that period, Ben Bernanke, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Tim Geithner, who was then the president of the New York Fed, and a handful of other very powerful people were sitting behind closed doors getting ready to lend out trillions, underlying trillions, of taxpayer dollars to large financial institutions and corporations with no debate going on in Congress, no debate whatsoever. Now, on March 3rd, 2009, and I'm a member of the Budget Committee, the Senate Budget Committee, I asked the Fed Chairman, Mr. Bernanke, to tell the American people the names of the financial institutions that received this unprecedented backdoor bailout from the Fed, how much they received, and the exact terms of this assistance. And I will never forget that. I asked Mr. Bernanke for that information. He said, Senator, nope, not going to give it to you, not going to make it public. Well, on that day, I introduced legislation to make that information public, working with a number of members of the House and the Senate. Some strange bedfellows, very conservatives, progressives, came together on this issue. We managed to get into the Wall Street reform bill a disclosure provision. And just on December 1st, last week, that information was made public. And let me talk a little bit about what was in that information made public by the Fed. After years of stonewalling, the American people have learned the incredible and jaw-dropping details of the Fed's multi-trillion-dollar bailout of Wall Street and corporate America, not just Wall Street, one of the things that we learned. As a result of this disclosure, in my view, Congress has got to take a very extensive look at all aspects of how the Federal Reserve functions and how we can make our financial institutions more responsive to the needs of ordinary Americans and small businesses. Now, what have we learned from the disclosure of December 1st? And this is based on an examination of over 21,000 separate Federal Reserve transactions. As it turns out, while small business owners in the state of Vermont and throughout this country were being turned down for loans, not only did large financial institutions, and I'm talking about every major financial institution, receive substantial help from the Fed, but also some of the largest corporations in this country, not financial institutions, also received help in terms of very, very low interest loans. So you got every major financial institution, you got some of our largest private corporations, but here's something that we also learned, and that is that this bailout impacted not just American banks and corporations, but also foreign banks and foreign corporations as well, to the tune of many, many billions of dollars. And then on top of that, a number of the wealthiest individuals in this country also received a major bailout from the Fed. The emergency response, which is what the Fed described their action as during the Wall Street collapse, appears to any objective observer to have been the clearest case that I can imagine of socialism for the very rich and rugged free market capitalism for everybody else. In other words, if you are a huge financial institution whose recklessness and greed caused this great recession, no problem. You are going to receive a substantial amount of help from the taxpayers of this country. If you are a major American corporation like General Electric or McDonald's or Caterpillar or Harley-Davidson or Verizon, no problem. You are going to receive a major handout from the United States government. But if you are a small business in Vermont or in California or Virginia, well, guess what? You're on your own. Because right now we know that one of the real impediments to the kind of job creation that we need in this country is that small businesses are not getting the loans they need. Furthermore, what we now know is the extent of the bailout for the large financial corporations. Goldman Sachs received nearly $600 billion. Morgan Stanley received nearly $2 trillion. Citigroup received $1.8 trillion. Bear Stearns received nearly $1 trillion. And Merrill Lynch received some $1.5 trillion in short-term loans from the Fed. But I think what is most surprising for the American people is not just the bailout of Wall Street and the financial institutions and the bailout of large American corporations like General Electric, but I think the American people would find it very strange that at a time when the American automobile sector was on the verge of collapse, and goodness only knows how many thousands and thousands of jobs we have lost in automobile manufacturing in this country, that the Federal Reserve was also bailing out Toyota and Mitsubishi, two Japanese car makers, by purchasing nearly $5 billion worth of their commercial paper from November 5, 2008 through January 30, 2009. While virtually no American-made cars or products of any kind are bought in Japan, I think the American people would be shocked to learn that the Fed extended over $380 billion to the Central Bank of Japan to bail out banks in that country. Furthermore, I think the American people are interested to know that the Fed bailed out the Korea Development Bank, the wholly owned state-owned bank of South Korea, by purchasing over $2 billion of its commercial paper. The sole purpose of the Korea Development Bank is to finance and manage major industrial projects to enhance the national economy, not of the United States of America, but of South Korea. I'm not against South Korea. I wish the South Koreans all the luck in the world. But it should not be the taxpayers of the United States lending their banks money to create jobs in South Korea. I would suggest that maybe we want to create jobs in the United States of America. At the same time, the Fed also extended over $40 billion to the Central Bank of South Korea so that it had enough money to bail out its own banks. Now, Mr. President, at a time when small businesses all over this country, in Vermont, all over this country, cannot get the loans they need to expand their businesses, I think the American people would find it extremely, I don't know what the word is, maybe amusing that the Fed bailed out the state-owned bank of Bavaria. Bavaria, it's not Pennsylvania, not California, Bavaria, by purchasing over $2.2 billion of its commercial paper. Furthermore, I think the American people would find it incomprehensible that the Fed chose to bail out the Arab Banking Corporation based in Bahrain by providing them with over $23 billion in loans with an interest rate as low as 0.25%. But it would be a nice thing, I think, if maybe the Fed would start paying attention to banks in this country. Furthermore, the Fed extended over $9.6 billion to the Central Bank of Mexico. Now, what's interesting about all of this, Mr. President, is that we had a very, very vigorous debate here in the Senate and in the House over the $700 billion TARP program. Every person in America could turn on C-SPAN and hear that debate, hear what President Bush had to say, hear what then-Senator Obama had to say, Senator McCain had to say. It was all pretty public. But what took place at the Fed, which in fact amounted to a larger bailout, was done behind closed doors. Over $3 trillion was lent out with zero transparency. In fact, as a result of this recent disclosure, this is the first time we have gotten a glimpse of the magnitude and the particulars, the specificities of where that money was lent out. And I think this is not a good thing for this country. Again, I voted against the bailout of Wall Street, but the debate was open. It was public. People wrote to their senators, called their senators. That's called democracy. After the TARP bailout took place, all of the loans were put up on the website. Transparency, the American people knew who got the money. But the actions of the Fed were done behind closed doors. And in my view, as an issue we're studying right now, I think that there were significant conflicts of interest. I think you had people sitting there at the New York Fed who were beneficiaries of this bailout. And that is just an issue that we've got to explore. And I should tell you, Mr. President, that as part of the provision we got into the financial reform bill, the GAO is in fact doing just that, investigating possible conflicts of interest at the Fed with regard to this bailout. But I think the question that the American people are asking as they read about what the Fed did during the financial crisis is whether or not the Fed has now become the central bank of the world without any debate on the floor of the United States Senate or the Congress and without the knowledge of the American people. And I think that that is wrong. So I would hope that out of this effort in bringing disclosure and transparency to the Fed, that one of the things that will come will be more transparency at the Fed. Mr. President, as I indicated a moment ago, the Fed said that this bailout was necessary in order to prevent the world economy from going over a cliff. But 3 years after the start of the recession, millions of Americans remain unemployed and have lost their homes, their life savings, and their ability to send their kids to college. Meanwhile, huge banks, large corporations, have returned to making incredible profits and paying their executives record-breaking compensation packages as if the financial crisis they started never occurred. What this recent disclosure tells us, among many other things, is that despite this huge taxpayer bailout, the Fed did not make the appropriate demands on these financial institutions, which would have been necessary to rebuild our economy and protect the needs of ordinary Americans. In other words, what they simply did is give out billions and billions of dollars, which were used in the self-interests of these financial institutions, rather than saying the American people who are hurting are bailing you out. And now that we've bailed you out, your responsibility is to do what you can do to create jobs and to improve the standard of living of the people whose lives you have severely impacted. And let me just give you a few examples of what could have been done and what should be done. At a time when big banks have nearly $1 trillion in excess reserves parked at the Fed has not required these institutions to increase lending to small and medium-sized businesses as the condition of the bailout. Instead of the Fed just giving money to these financial institutions, the Fed should have said, we're giving you this money in order to get it into the economy. Start providing affordable loans to small businesses. President, at a time when large corporations are more profitable than ever, the Fed did not demand that corporations that received this backdoor bailout create jobs and expand the economy once they returned to profitability. So what's going on in America, unemployment officially at 9.8, in real sense probably at 15-16%. Wall Street is now doing fine. A few years ago, Wall Street earned some 40% of all profits in America. They're doing great. But what the Fed should have done and should do now is to tell Wall Street, you're part of the economy. You're not an isolated area just living for yourselves. You've got to be part of the productive economy. You've got to lend out money to small businesses to start creating jobs. Mr. President, my office intends to investigate whether these secret Fed loans, in some cases, turned out to be direct corporate welfare to big banks that may have used those loans not to reinvest in the economy, but rather to lend back to the federal government at a higher rate of interest by purchasing Treasury securities. Now, we don't know that. Maybe that's true, maybe it's not true, but we'll take a look at it. In other words, did the Fed give 0.5% loans to a bank, and that bank then purchase a Treasury security at 2 or 3%? If so, you got a 2% profit margin, and that is nothing but corporate welfare. The goal of the bailout was not to make Wall Street richer. The goal was to expand our economy and put people to work. Furthermore, Mr. President, you know, as part of the TARP agreement, there was an effort to say to the financial institutions that we're not bailing you out in order for you to get huge compensation packages. We're not going to give you federal money so that you can make all kinds of money. We put limitations on executive compensation. Did the Fed play the role of allowing some of the large financial institutions to pay back the TARP money, use the Fed money, and then continue with their very, very high executive compensation? Don't know that. It is worth investigating. Furthermore, Mr. President, and this is an issue that I have worked on for a number of years. You know, every major religion on earth, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, you name it, has always felt that usury was immoral. Usury. And we mean by usury is that when somebody doesn't have a whole lot of money and you lend them money, you don't take blood out of a stone. You don't ask for outrageously high interest rates when somebody is hurting. And yet today, Mr. President, we have millions of people in our country, and I hear from Vermonters every week on this issue, who are paying 25 or 30%, and in some cases, even higher interest rates on their credit cards. That is getting blood out of a stone. And yet, many of the credit card companies were bailed out by the taxpayers of this country. What the Fed must do is say to those companies, sorry, you can't continue to rip off the American people and charge them 25 or 30% interest rates. Now, as it happens, the four largest banks in this country, which are Bank of America, J.P. Morgan, Chase, Wells Fargo, and Citigroup, issue half of all mortgages in this country. Now, that unto itself is a huge problem. They issue half of all mortgages, two-thirds of all credit cards. And that speaks to another issue about the need to start breaking up these financial institutions. But when you have a handful of banks who have received huge bailouts from the federal government, who are issuing two-thirds of the credit cards in this country, it seems to me to be somewhat absurd that the Fed did not say to them, sorry, you can't charge people 25 or 30% interest rates on their credit cards. And the same principle applies to the mortgages. I don't have to tell anybody in this country that we have seen millions of folks lose their homes through foreclosure. And once again, we see the four largest banks in this country, Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, and Citigroup, issue half of all mortgages in this country. How many more Americans could have remained in their homes if the Fed required those bailed-out banks to reduce mortgage payments as a condition of receiving these secret loans? In terms of the interest rates on credit cards, a lot of people don't know this, but right now the banks are able to charge as much as they want to charge, but in fact, credit unions are not. Right now, we are looking at a situation where over one quarter of all credit card holders in this country are now paying interest rates above 20%, and in some cases as high as 79%. And in my view, Mr. President, when credit card companies charge over 20% interest, they are not engaged in the business of making credit available to their customers. They are involved in extortion and loan sharking. Nothing essentially different than gangsters who charge outrageously high prices for their loans and who break kneecaps when their victims can't afford to pay them. So that's where we are right now. And we are working on legislation which would say to these private banks not to charge any more money for the credit that they provide than do the credit unions. So, Mr. President, on and on and on it goes. The rich and large corporations get richer. The CEOs earn huge compensation packages. When things get bad, don't worry. Uncle Sam and the American taxpayers are here to bail you out. But when you are in trouble, well, we just can't afford to help you if you're in the working class or the middle class of this country.
That was an excerpt from Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders' 8.5-hour filibuster speech in protest of the so-called Tax Relief, Unemployment Insurance Reauthorization and Job Creation Act of 2010. The act also extended tax breaks to the richest of the rich. In his last-ditch appeal to prevent adoption, Sanders explained that this bill begins to dismantle Social Security and sets in motion even larger gifts to corporations and banks while doing nothing to create jobs.
Well, I hope your head is not swimming with details. I hope instead that you have taken in the forest rather than the trees, the larger picture of an immense amount of money for ordinary people, an unthinkable amount of money, which is created out of nothing and dished up on computers to pay for effectively nothing. Now, just to clarify the role of the loans, I think too many of us know the importance of receiving money in time, in order that properties are not foreclosed, in order that transactions can go through, as one might say, to keep us alive. Except, of course, I don't accept the equation between life and money. But for banks, of course, the rules of their particular deceptive game are that money from the Federal Reserve can be used as collateral against which to issue more debt. So the receipt of this high-powered money allows them to create money out of nothing, lend that out, and collect interest on it, or, in lieu of interest, to collect foreclosed property, if that's the way that it falls. Either way, it grants them a huge income source. So whilst you might think just lending out money isn't such a big deal, this is effectively handing out money. And there was one point during that speech, I must admit, when Bernie Sanders was sounding exasperated, that the US Federal Reserve would hand out hundreds of billions of dollars in loans to other countries' central banks, as if he somehow expected they would be loyal to their own countrymen, so-called. He did appear to have heard the Parenti on greed as addiction, perhaps not the Parenti on patriotism. Now, if we leave the quite probable theory of an old boys' network aside, why might the Federal Reserve want to hand out hundreds of billions of dollars to other nations' central banks? Of course, to stabilize the system, i.e. to perpetuate the illusion that what they say is valuable is in fact valuable. Now, Sanders' faith both in democracy and in the idea that the Fed would somehow be loyal to American banks and companies reminded me, I must say, of the following speech from the prescient 1970s film The Network.
You howl about America and democracy. There is no America. There is no democracy. There is only IBM and ITT and AT&T and DuPont, Dow, Union Carbide, and Exxon. Those are the nations of the world today. What do you think the Russians talk about in their councils of state? Karl Marx? They get out their linear programming charts, statistical decision theories, min-max solutions, and compute the price-cost probabilities of their transactions and investments, just like we do. We no longer live in a world of nations and ideologies. The world is a college of corporations, inexorably determined by the immutable bylaws of business. The world is a business.
Now, the idea that all other value sets get consumed by those of business is a familiar one, as is the thought that the bailouts, the handouts, if you like, are basically just a super-accelerated phenomenon which has been going on for a very long time, the predation on the many by a few who use the state and the machinery of government as an excuse, some kind of legitimation for what they're doing. Now, as we hear a wealth of statistics from Sanders, I'd like you to reflect on how this might turn out. I see two possible ways it could go, neither of them a reversion to what someone might consider normality. I think it's gone way too far for that. I think either the few who are in so-called positions of power in the current system with an openly psychopathic ideology will end up engineering the kill-off of most other people in the world, anybody in fact who can't be turned to their narrow selfish gains, whether through lack of food or poisoning or whatever, or a mass refusal to take part in the system, to honour these so-called debts, which are presently turning millions of Americans out of their homes. I'm still amazed that people put up with this, just as I'm amazed that people tolerate enormous amounts of money being spent on weapons of war.
There is a war going on in this country. And I'm not referring to the war in Iraq or the war in Afghanistan. I'm talking about a war being waged by some of the wealthiest and most powerful people in this country against the working families of the United States, against the disappearing and shrinking middle class of our country. The billionaires of America are on the warpath. They want more and more and more. And that has everything to do with this agreement reached between the Republicans and the President. Mr. President, in 2007, the top 1% of all income earners in the United States made 23.5% of all income. Let me repeat that. Top 1% earned over 23% of all income. That is more than the bottom 50%. But for the very, very wealthy in this country, that's apparently not enough. The percentage of income going to the top 1% nearly tripled since the 1970s. Now, all over this country, people are angry. They're frustrated. It's true in Vermont. I'm sure it's true in Virginia. It's true all over America. But one of the reasons that people are angry and frustrated is they're working incredibly hard. In the state of Vermont, which I represent, I can tell you, there are people who don't work one job. They don't work two jobs. There are people who work in three jobs and four jobs trying to cobble together an income in order to support their families. And I suspect that goes on all across the country. But people are working harder and harder. In many cases, their income is going down. And the fact is that 80% of all new income earned from 1980 to 2005 has gone to the top 1%. And I think that explains why the American people are feeling as angry as they are right now. But that is not apparently enough. Our friends at the top, who have a religious ferocity in terms of greed, they need more and they need more. It's like an addiction. 50 million is not enough. They need 100 million. 100 million is not enough. They need a billion. Billion is not enough. I'm not quite sure how much they need. When will it stop? Today, in terms of wealth as opposed to income, the top 1% now owns more wealth than the bottom 90%. You know, Mr. President, we went to school and we used to read in the textbooks about Latin America, for example, and they used to refer to some of the countries there as what they call banana republics, countries in which a handful of families control the economic and political life of the nation. Well, I don't want to get the American people too upset, but we are not all that far away from that reality today. Top 1% has seen a tripling of the percentage of income they earn since 1970s. Top 1% owning 23% of all income, more than the bottom 50%. Top 1% now owns more wealth than the bottom 90%. That's not the foundation of a democratic society. That's the foundation for an oligarchic society. But, hey, rich get richer, middle class shrinks, poverty increases. Apparently that is not good enough yet for some of the richest people in this country. And I say some of the richest, because there are a lot of folks there who have a lot of money who do love this country, who do want to do the right thing. They're not into greed, but there are some who are. More. That's what they need. For example, and this I think galls me and I think galls many of the people in this country, the horrendous recession that we're in right now, where millions and millions of people have lost their jobs, they've lost their savings, they've lost their homes. This recession is caused by the greed and recklessness and illegal behavior. Let me underline it. I'll talk about more of this later. The illegal behavior on Wall Street. So these guys, through their greed, resulted in the most severe economic recession since the Great Depression. The American people bailed them out. And now, 2 years after the bailout, guess what? They are giving themselves more compensation than they ever have. So they're saying to the American people, sorry we caused this recession because of our greed. Sorry you're unemployed. Sorry you lost your house. But you know what? That's not really all that important. What's important is that I on Wall Street continue to get tens and millions of dollars in compensation and in bonuses, that I have big parties. How can I get by on one house? I need 5 houses, 10 houses. I need 3 jet planes to take me all over the world. Sorry, the American people. We've got the money. We've got the power. We've got the lobbyists here on Wall Street. Tough luck. That's the world. Get used to it. The very rich seem to want more and more and more, and they are prepared to dismantle the existing political and social order in order to get it. So you got economics and distribution of income and wealth is one thing, but then we're talking about politics. And what happened last year, as I think most Americans know, is the Supreme Court made a very strange decision. The Supreme Court decided that corporations are people. They're people, and they have the right of free speech, and they have the right without disclosure. All of this is through the Citizens United Supreme Court decision that corporate heads can put as much money as they want into campaigns all over the country. In the last campaign, that's what we saw. Billionaires in secret just pouring money into campaigns all over this country. Now, does that sound like democracy to anybody in America? That you got a handful of billionaires probably dividing up the country. Oh, we'll put this amount of money into Virginia and Vermont, California, wherever. But that's what they were able to do. So the rich get richer, and they don't sit on this money. What they then do is use it to elect people who support them, to unelect people who oppose their agenda, and they use their political power to get legislation passed, which makes the wealthy even wealthier. Mr. President, one of the manifestations of that is, in fact, the agreement reached between the President and the Republican leadership. The wealthy contribute huge sums of money into campaign. The wealthy have all kinds of lobbyists around here, as do corporate America. And what they are going to get out of this agreement are huge, huge tax breaks that benefit themselves. And that is not what we should be supporting. Let me just personalize this a little bit. This gentleman, no personal animus to him at all. I think I met him once in a large room. His name is Jamie Dimon. He is the CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase. Over the past 5 years, Mr. Dimon received $89 million in total compensation, a bank that we now know received hundreds of billions in low-interest loans and other financial assistance from the Federal Reserve and the Treasury Department. All right? So Mr. Dimon received $89 million in total compensation. His bank was bailed out big time by the taxpayers. But under the legislation that the President negotiated with the Republicans, Mr. Dimon, and I use him just as one example for thousands, nothing personal to Mr. Dimon here, will receive $1.1 million in tax breaks. $1.1 million in tax breaks for a major CEO on Wall Street who over the last 5 years received $89 million in total compensation. Meanwhile, there is, just to contrast what's going on here, 2 days ago, Mr. President, I brought before the Senate legislation which would provide a $250 one-time check to over 50 million seniors and disabled veterans who for the last 2 years have not received a COLA on their Social Security. Many of those seniors and disabled vets are trying to get by on $14,000, $15,000, $18,000 a year. The total package for that bill was approximately $14 billion, that would go out to over 50 million seniors and disabled vets. We won that vote on the floor of the Senate 53-45. But just because you get 53 votes in the Senate doesn't really mean you win, because the Republicans filibustered. I needed 60 votes. I could not get 60 votes. I could not get one Republican vote to provide a $250 check to a disabled veteran trying to get by on $15,000 or $16,000 a year. But Mr. Diamond, who made $89 million in the last 5 years, will get a $1 million tax deduction. And again, no particular knowledge, animus. I don't know that I've ever met John Mack in my life. He is the CEO of Morgan Stanley. In 2006, he received a $40 million bonus, which at the time was the largest bonus ever given to a Wall Street executive. 2 years after receiving this bonus, Morgan Stanley received some $2 trillion in low-interest loans and billions from the Treasury Department. Instead of losing his job under this agreement, Mr. Mack will be receiving an estimated $926,000 tax break next year. Congratulations, Mr. Mack. You're doing just fine. Over the past 5 years, Ken Lewis, the former CEO of Bank of America, received over $165 million in total compensation. In 2008, Bank of America received hundreds of billions in taxpayer-backed loans from the Fed and a $45 billion bailout from the Treasury Department. What will Mr. Lewis receive? He will get a $713,000 tax cut. On and on it goes. And so we as a nation have got to decide whether or not that makes a lot of sense. I think it doesn't. Last year, our friends at ExxonMobil, and ExxonMobil has historically been the most profitable corporation in the history of the world. Last year, ExxonMobil had a very bad year. They only made $19 billion in profit. Mr. President, based on $19 billion, you might be surprised to know that ExxonMobil not only paid nothing in taxes, they got a $156 million return from the IRS. Now, how's that? For those of you who are working in an office, you're working in a factory, you're earning your $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year, you pay taxes. But if you are ExxonMobil and you made $19 billion in profits last year, not only did you not pay any taxes this year, you got $156 million return. That's pretty good, I think. Mr. President, it's not just the large oil companies who do not pay their fair share of taxes. I'm getting into this a little bit later. But when we understand or try to understand why we have such a huge national debt and a $1.3 or $4 trillion deficit, it's also important to understand that many large and profitable corporations avoid virtually all of their tax responsibility. In August 2008, the General Accountability Office here issued a report. And according to this report, two out of every three corporations in the United States paid no federal income taxes between 1998 and 2005. Amazingly, these corporations had a combined $2.5 trillion in sales, but paid no income taxes to the IRS. Furthermore, according to a report from Citizens for Tax Justice, 82 Fortune 500 companies in America, I guess that's 82 out of 500, paid zero or less in federal income taxes in at least 1 year from 2001 to 2003. That's a report from Citizens for Tax Justice. And the Citizens for Tax Justice report goes on to say, and I quote, in the years they paid no income tax, these companies earned $102 billion in U.S. profits. But instead of paying $35.6 billion in income taxes, as the statutory 35% corporate tax rate seems to require, these companies generated so many excess tax breaks that they received outright tax rebate checks from the U.S. Treasury, totaling $12.6 billion. That's from the Citizens for Tax Justice. So, Mr. President, when we take a comprehensive look at what is going on in this country, why we have a $13.7 trillion national debt, it is terribly important to understand that while the middle class pays its share of taxes, there are many, many, many large corporations that not only are paying nothing in taxes, they are getting rebates from the federal government. I'm going to go on to this at greater length later on. But as a member of the Budget Committee, I can tell you, we discuss quite often about how every single year, corporate interests and wealthy individuals stash away huge amounts of money in tax havens in the Cayman Islands, Bermuda, and other countries in order to avoid paying their taxes in the United States of America. These are American corporations turning their backs on the American people, saying, as Mrs. Helmsley said so many years ago, I guess many of you remember, only small people pay taxes. Only the working stiffs out there pay taxes. If you're a large corporation, you got a good lawyer, you know what you do, good accountant. Invest your money in the Cayman Islands and in Bermuda. You don't have to pay American taxes. But by the way, as the disclosure report of last week indicated, no problem, you get bailed out. When things go bad, you will be bailed out by American taxpayers. Furthermore, Mr. President, and this is a point that has got to be made over and over and over again, this agreement between the President and the Republicans lowers the estate tax rate to 35%. Under President Clinton, when the economy was much stronger, the estate tax was 55%. Now, I know, Mr. President, that the Republicans have done a very good job in trying to convince the American people that this is a so-called death tax, that in every family in America, when a loved one dies, the family is going to have to pay 35%, 45%, 55%. I have had people in Burlington, Vermont, coming up to me and say, what are you doing? I got $30,000 in the bank. I want to leave it to my kids. Why are you forcing my kids to pay such a large tax? So let us be very, very clear. The Republicans have done a very good job in totally distorting this issue. The estate tax is paid only by the top 0.3% of families in America. So what the Republicans have been arguing for several years now is they want to repeal the estate tax entirely. If they were successful in doing that, Mr. President, that would mean increasing the national debt by $1 trillion over a 10-year period. How's that? And all of the benefits, not some, all of the benefits go to the top 0.3%. 99.7% of the people do not gain one nickel. And I want to spend a minute now in talking about one aspect of what's going on in this country that does not get the kind of attention that it deserves. And the very simple issue that I want to talk about for a moment is who is winning and who's losing in the economy. And in fact, in America, it's pretty clear in the economy who's winning and losing. Vast majority of people, working people, middle-class people, low-income people are losing. That's who's losing. In America today, we have the most unequal distribution of wealth and income in the industrialized world. Mr. President, during the 8 years of President Bush, the wealthiest 400 Americans, that's not a lot of people, 400 families, saw their income more than double, while their income tax rates dropped almost in half. So you got 400 families, all of whom are already multi-millionaires. During the 8 years of President Bush, their income more than doubled, while their income tax rates dropped almost in half. I would say to my colleagues here in the Senate, we don't have to worry about these guys. They're doing just fine. They don't need an extension of tax breaks. Mr. President, the wealthiest 400 Americans now earn, on average, $345 million a year, and they pay an effective tax rate of 16.6%. They do not need an extension of tax breaks. And by the way, for the United States of America, this effective tax rate of 16.6% on average is the lowest tax rate for the very rich in America that has ever been. So we've already given the wealthiest people in this country the lowest effective tax rates in the history of our country. That's what we've done, on record, at least since they've been keeping records. Mr. President, under the 8 years of President Bush, the wealthiest 400 Americans, now we talked about how they doubled their incomes. Incomes is what happens in 1 year. Under the 8 years of Bush, the wealthiest 400 Americans increased their wealth by more than $380 billion. 400 families increased their wealth by $380 billion. That averages to almost $1 billion a family. $1 billion in 8 years. That's the average. Some obviously are more. Collectively, and I know this is not an issue that we talk about too much, collectively, the 400 richest Americans have accumulated $1.27 trillion in wealth. How much more do they want? When is enough enough? Do you want it all? We already have millions of families today that have zero wealth. They own less, they owe more than they own. Millions of families have zero, below zero wealth. We are living in a situation where the top 1% owns more wealth than the bottom 90%. And, Mr. President, that is simply unacceptable. Today in our country, and this is something we must be absolutely ashamed about and have got to address, that instead of giving tax breaks to billionaires, maybe we should appreciate the fact that about 25% of our children are dependent on food stamps. We should understand that in the industrialized world, the United States of America has the highest rate of childhood poverty in the industrialized world. Is this America?
That was an excerpt from Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders' 8.5-hour filibuster speech in protest of the so-called Tax Relief, Unemployment Insurance Reauthorization and Job Creation Act of 2010. The act also extended tax breaks to the richest of the rich. In his last-ditch appeal to prevent adoption, Sanders explained that this bill begins to dismantle Social Security and sets in motion even larger gifts to corporations and banks, while doing nothing to create jobs.